I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah.
I challenge a Japanese man to spell O'Donoghue.
Dude, I challenge an English-speaking man to spell O'Donoghue. Yeah, I've been Mr. Odinug my entire life with these fucking French men. Boys here, the internet's number one stranger in a strange land podcast is back. More of what you need. I am your pilot, Peter O'Donoghue, and marooned in the Japans with me are...
Who am I? I don't know anybody here. What is this weird place?
Wake up. Look at the sun one last time. Your name is Ethan. Ethan, wake up. One last time.
Oh, what? Mommy, is that you?
No.
My name is... James, and widowy, there was supposed to be so many women who are here to see me, and I don't see any of these women at all. So,
well, you've got one tucked under your arm there.
This is my limited edition collection anime pillow, and she goes everywhere with me, but I am looking for
which anime character is that? Is that anime waifu that you have there?
How old is she, and what does she look like?
This is from Vampire Hunter D, and okay. She is...
Are there waifus in that?
There must be a saucy.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, all saucy posts is straight up monster ladies and then says wood, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, which is... that's what would kill them.
Anyone's a waifu. Anything's a waifu if you try hard enough.
That's true. Yeah, it's a broad term. But you're not off
there. It's a broad term? Waifu?
Pretty good, Pete. That's pretty good, Pete.
Look at those gams. You're not too far off there, Jamie, because we will cover, historically, Christendom's first weeaboo coming up later on. So don't you worry about it.
Very good.
So really? Today's That's episode, exciting. At least at the time of writing, which when I started this was last Thursday, and then just kind of add little bits of it over the past 5 days. This was not actually requested by anybody, but I
you
recently... I know, I'm sorry.
I'm saying the people who didn't request it, who didn't ask for this.
He's like, watch some good fucking TV for once.
We've been giving Pete a lot of shit, so he's clearly conditioned to just apologize.
My bad, yeah.
Pete's head hurts.
I was grumpy. I had to go twice in a row, and I made it everybody else's problem.
Like, yeah, no worries. Yeah, it's like, I couldn't see, and I made it everyone else's problem. So really, we're in the same boat. so I recently finished the 2024 effects miniseries Shogun and fucking adored it. It's absolutely fantastic. I got through all the old HBO catalogs when I was unemployed last year.
It's on FX. It's from FX. I assume it's a Sunny spinoff, right?
Gang. It is. Yeah. The gang
is shipwrecked in Japan.
But yeah, FX, like Sons of Anarchy, Atlanta, it Always Sunny in Philadelphia, obviously. And then Rescue Me is one that I've never seen but heard is fantastic. FX, friend of the show, Kyle loves Rescue Me. FX, excellent channel here.
FX, friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Kyle. This episode is going to cover a bit about the show, but the 10th episode came out last week, so like if you're looking to binge something, like some kind of animal, then it's all available there. I was watching it a week at a time. It did the classic 2 episodes, then 1 a week for, I guess it's 9 weeks, right?
Sure.
So we're going to cover a bit about the show. No major spoilers for anything, but I'm mostly going to be focusing on the real people and the history that the characters from the show and the 1975 novel by Australian author James Clavell were all based on. So I did my best to minimize spoilers. Now, I know we've covered this before, but just for the people in the back, did you guys read the book that I sent you?
No.
I didn't watch the YouTube video you sent me, if I'm being honest.
I just sent you a music video. It's not
I loaded the music video. I loaded the music video and Discord broke and it just kept playing and I couldn't close it. And I minimized Discord on my phone and it just kept playing the music. I couldn't get rid of it. I had to force close Discord on my phone.
It was just J-pop. It's okay. But I know you guys haven't seen the TV show.
But you don't understand. I opened it, then my wife walked into the room. So I was desperately trying to close it. So she didn't ask me, "What's that you're listening to?" Because I had no idea.
He just broke his phone on the corner of the table. Nothing.
Two hands over snapped him.
Like, his screen, like, screen down on the side.
I'm watching porn. It's better. Yeah.
So a quick trivia note about James Clavell, the author. He joined the Royal Artillery in Australia in 1940, and after the attack on Pearl Harbor was sent to fight the Japanese in Singapore. At some point in 1942, he was shot in the face and then imprisoned by the Japanese at a camp in Java.
It's going to be top 10 worst places to get shot.
Yeah, but if you look at the photo of him, the first spoiler photo, Japan. He looks... great. Yeah, Java. The Singapore is the worst place to get shot in the face.
Oh, Singapore. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I'm opening the picture. He looks to be like in his 50s, maybe. But maybe he was drafted at like 62. And so he got shot after this.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. That's what they were doing, is drafting old men to fight the Japanese.
Hey, why should young men go die in war? Let the old men do it.
Maybe it went right in his throat like David Cardio. Blaine. You know, David Blaine was like trying to do that trick where he catches a bullet in his mouth with like a little tiny thing.
And if you lie perfectly on your stomach and tilt your head back and open your mouth, the bullet can go straight through you without touching anything.
Because you just make one
continuous hole,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You have to relax your butt.
We had a friend in high school.
You need your poppers to let the bullet get out like really quick.
Yeah. Our friend Allie, her dad was working with a nail gun. And a nail ricocheted up his nose, and he didn't notice. Like he found
it's like,
days
it's
later.
Homer Simpson shit.
Yeah, he found it days later. He's like, "Oh, there's something really uncomfortable." And they did it at an X-ray, and it had bounced up his nose and was like lodged up there. And they got it out. Yeah,
good for him.
That could happen. So careful. That could have been this guy with the bullet.
Yeah, but also I was just thinking, just like if one of my own eyelashes gets a little ornery, I'm like, homeboy had a nail in his head. I should get this checked out.
I guess.
Although maybe the nail hit the freak out when you get a nail in your face.
Yeah, exactly.
Of his brain. You know what I mean?
This actually hit the nail in your head detecting nerve in your brain. So it was completely cloaked.
I bet that people who work with nail guns regularly are less fussed about their eyelashes as well.
Than you, Peter? Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
They probably
wear goggles to protect their eyelashes.
No,
obviously.
They don't. None of them do.
I don't wear goggles at all day. Mine are exposed to the elements.
If I know anything about framers, they don't wear the safety gear that they're supposed to.
Oh, no?
A lot of them.
Well, I mean, we try not to sell out too many OSHA violations on this show, but if you're on a construction site right now, maybe put on a single gog just on one of your eyes.
Yeah, and close the other one.
Obviously, small sample sizes, like not all carpet, not all plumbers, whatever. My brother worked construction for 10 years. And he was a foreman, and he said the dumbest guys he met were always the asbestos guys, because they would have like their full like hazmat suits or whatever.
Breathing with their mouths open.
Well, they would have these full hazmat suits that they had to wear whenever they were working with asbestos. But anytime they took their break, they would just like pop the hat off and smoke their cigarettes. Which again, not all asbestos workers, but
right.
You know, those ones do stick out to you. When somebody does that, that sticks with you, I bet.
Yeah.
The cigarette inside the hazmat suit, just like completely fogged up.
Yeah, they opened it all up, so they get the cigarettes and the asbestos.
Oh, God. Oh yeah, of course. Excuse me. Me and my like concern for my eyelashes was just like, well, certainly they've walked away from the asbestos, right? No,
they're just hanging out in there. Like,
genius.
Out,
I mean, the high school we went to was filled with asbestos. We might have it in us too.
I mean, that was said. I don't know how true it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I smoked cigarettes at that high school, so I'm basically an asbestos worker.
That's yeah, true. Dude, you're part of the union, dude. Let's go.
You should be getting hazard pay. You should be getting paid a lot more than what you're getting paid.
Yeah, absolutely. You or someone you know have mesothelioma because you can be entitled to compensation. Yeah,
pretty sure they make like $120 an hour to smoke those cigarettes. So
hell yeah.
Oh fuck yeah, let's go. So Shogun has been adapted into two miniseries, a musical, which I neglected to watch, but that's fantastic.
That would have been the first. That's the first thing I'm watching.
Yeah, bring it up, dude. Pull up the clip. Put it in the chat for the patrons. And also three video games. But since this book came out in 1975, two of the games are text-based only, and one of them has minimal graphics. We will get into another game very briefly later on, which was like, I was having these like false memories when I was watching the show, and I was like, no, it couldn't be. Turns out I was right, and we'll get into it for a second later on.
Okay.
So our POV character, John Blackthorn, is who we're going to get into first, right after establishing a little bit of the setting, because like,
you know, we talk about the world building of Japan before we get too deep into the story?
Yeah, exactly. So Oda Nobunaga made up Japan in 1961. Actually, it was his first project after the war,
and he was pen pals with L. Ron Hubbard.
He was, yeah.
Much like the Tolkien and C.S. Lewis connection. Thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow. Odu Nobunaga and L. Ron Hubbard were big.
And L. Ron Hubbard, exactly. They were both out in international waters north of Hawaii. Just making up shit.
Say what you want about L. Ron Hubbard. Good world building, I guess. That Xenu shit is crazy.
Volcano ghosts. That's cool. I like it a lot, actually. Hey, Tom Cruise, hit me up. HMU. So Japan, if somehow you hadn't noticed, is very, very far away from Europe, which are the main characters of history, from our perspective, at least.
Okay.
So the first Europeans that we know of who made it to the Japanese archipelago were the Portuguese. They landed in the southern Japans in 1543. I will go back and forth between Japan and the Japans. The Japans is the old term. Since a archipelago is a plurality of islands, older Europeans, and throughout the entire show, they refer to it as the Japans, opposed to just like the unified thing.
So, sorry, is the Shogun take place in the 16th century?
It takes place in 1600, so the first year, I guess the last year of the 16th century.
Okay, because like my question was like, was the Japanese Empire a thing? Like, was southern Japan Malaysia or something, you know?
No. The archipelago itself was still just like, if you imagine all the proper parts of Japan, at least kind of the big triangular bit, then you've got the crescent moon bit and the upper bit, which I, in my head, are like the three bits of Japan. It's the southern part is what you would be talking about. At this point, they had not spread out into the ocean to do all their conquering. They did that really after they got guns, which were imported by the Portuguese, which I'm going to get into right now.
Cool.
So the first Europeans that we know of, again, I say that we know of simply because like, oh, Christopher Columbus hit the Caribbean, let's go, which was 400 years after Vikings had come to Vinland, right? And we didn't really know about that at the time, and or it was whatever, right? Like kind of shuffled out. Like I'm not going to give the Portuguese credit. Just in case somehow the Spanish or some other European country had gotten there first.
Gotcha.
So due to poor relations with the Japanese actually used the Portuguese as a way of buying silks and other cool Chinese exclusives while it was forbidden at the time by the emperor. So this is why they loved relationships with European traders was for silk, porcelain, a lot of other stuff, fucking guns. So because they had a bad relationship with the Chinese at the time, who invented gunpowder, they didn't really have a whole lot of firearm options in the Japans at the time. Also, the Japanese were very interested in European versions of guns. It's called like the arquebus or whatever. It's the very kind of, it's a very fat kind of square hand cannon sort of thing. But also naval cannons. So the Japanese Navy at this time did not have gunpowder cannons to fight other ships with.
Whoa, I know something about the pirate ships in the 1600s because of Bobby Ferry, our friend.
Okay, hit us.
Okay, Bobby, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong.
Little bonus Bobby fact.
In the 1600s, there was French sailors who went by buccaneers.
because they used to, the way they got this name is on the front of their ships, they would have basically like a primitive grill or barbecue that they would cook their food on, which they called Buchan, like while they cooked the food, which is old barbecue. And that's how the Buchan became the Buccaneers, which were the people who sailed in the 1600s. And it could be an early origin of barbecue food. And now, Ethan, let me know if I'm right, if you're looking
at it. I'm not looking at it.
Okay.
That's what's good enough for me, man.
Bobby, if I'm wrong, I remembered what you said wrong, but that's what I've been telling people since.
Just let us believe, you know what I mean?
For a long time, I was saying, I don't know if this is right. I don't think bugs got blood. And I was not completely wrong, but mostly wrong.
No, I was thinking on how having a strong navy probably really, really important for an island empire.
Right. Did you think of that first? Did you come up with that?
Yeah, I came up with it before the Japanese did in the 16th century. Yeah.
I wish you could tell Nobunaga right now. He could probably use that advice. So the Portuguese would also bring over Catholic Jesuits, who would establish the port of Nagasaki and begin trying to convert the natives to Catholicism. After a like century of resounding success of converting the natives in the Americas to Catholicism, right? So they were just like, "Wah, new islands, let's go. New island without guns. Hell man, yeah. That's our favorite fucking thing to convert to Catholicism. Let's do it." Hell.
Showing up with literal hand cannons that are like half your height and just blowing people away like this big of a hole in their stuff.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, dude. Yeah. That's brutal.
Yeah, so the Portuguese brought over Catholics and guns, two things that have never done anything bad ever when they are completely unregulated, right?
No.
Our producer has actually just pinged us to offer a correction. The process of civilizing the natives in the Americas was actually a fucking disaster, resulting in the deaths of hundreds of millions of people.
Should I feel culpable? Should I feel partially responsible for this?
Could be.
But, okay, wait, if it was a disaster and we stole that land, that would mean that I'm probably in some sort of weird position of power over Native Americans today. I don't think that's the case.
I don't think that's true, Blondie.
Doesn't sound right to me. Doesn't sound right to me.
In any case, introducing Catholics was thankfully the worst thing that the West TM would ever do to Nagasaki.
I mean, to most people.
I know it's kind of hack just to say I saw a meme, but it's so irrelevant. It was a simulation of Goku versus 10,000 Native Americans.
Yes.
Goku. Oh, Goku won.
I mean. Yeah. He'd probably beat 10,000 of any humans, right?
Yeah, Goku's not real, though.
He's a monkey man from space.
He couldn't beat 10,000 Catholics. I think 10,000 Catholics actually with very guns? Strong, Ethan.
Yeah, with handguns, I don't know.
Well, they have the power of God and anime on their side if they're Japanese Catholics, right?
True. We gotta run The Sims.
Damn. Okay, never mind. That is cool. So this brings us to the beginning of our story. In 1600, our audience surrogate, so this is the show, a man named John Blackthorne arrives in the Japans along after a long and disastrous journey from Europe. Most of the men aboard the Dutch ship, the Erasmus, have died, including the captain, leaving
Erasmus. What is this, Dune? I had to beat Jamie to it.
Did you hear that? Erasmus, the ship? He was the guy who made the Mentat. He took the feral human and made it as fast as he could. What does Erasmus mean, I wonder?
He's a person.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there we go. All right, we solved the mystery. where was I here? Right, leaving the captain himself had also died, leaving only a few alive. John Blackthorne, the ship's pilot, is among them. I didn't look into actually what this position on the ship was. I think it's the navigator, but the Japanese also use him to steer some of their ships when the guild navigator. John Blackthorne's got the spice.
Yeah,
he's high on the spice.
I will say, there's just some good symbolism here. Erasmus was the first editor of the New Testament, so there's your symbolism for
that's
the
why pencils got
that.
Erasmus to erase all the women's rights out of the New Testament.
all mentions to tyranny. And yeah.
You guys reminded me. This is a chance. I tried this character on you guys, but I really wanted to do it on the show.
Oh so. Yes, right,
that's right. Okay. So if they don't laugh, it's because they already heard it because it's very very funny. But anyways, it's so instead of Indiana Jones, it's incel Deanna Jones, right? And he goes, "I hate women. I mean, no, fuck.
Snakes and women. Yeah. I fucked it up. I did it better all fucked up at the farm than I did.
Yeah. So, THC into this man.
Yeah.
And he'd kill it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, Harrison Ford just drunk driving a plane saying he hates snakes and women. That's incel Deanna Jones.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford like drunkenly rescued a child in the woods with his like single engine aircraft or something.
Yeah. Someone was lost and they like set a fire and a plane landed to save them. And it was just Harrison Ford driving a plane. And then someone at the party also let us know that he was just land the wrong way on air.
He land on the wrong tarmac all the time at like international airports and stuff.
Indiana Jones rescued me in like a single otter or like a small single engine aircraft, I would have assumed I was dying and just like all the like the DMT your brain generates when you're dying to send you on your spirit quest had just kicked in and he was the character my brain cast, right?
Yeah.
You called an airplane an otter. You are famously the otter in the Otter Twink and the Bear trichotomy that we have
our gay
here.
Radio podcast and, I understand
and
you're
single, so when you say he rescued me in a single otter, I have shipped you and Harrison Ford now in my head canon. You guys are an item.
Oh yeah,
like it's a single engine pontoon plane. There's a single otter and a twin otter. The twin otter is when you get a couple. That's just on your birthday though.
Yeah, that's it. That's when you hold hands, float in the water, and jerk off together.
Harrison Ford probably gives a good hug.
I was gonna say he probably gives a good hand job in the pool.
Oh yeah, good hand solo.
We talked over the weekend. I doubt he goes down. I doubt Harrison Ford goes down.
You don't think he eats pussy, eh?
Well, we were talking about DJ Khaled, and then earlier in the night, and Harrison Ford came out. I said, I bet he doesn't.
No.
Doesn't seem like the type.
We should do a tier list at some point.
We agreed that Pitbull eats ass. That's one thing that we did agree on.
That's why his face, that's why his mouth's crooked.
Yeah, Mr. Worldwide?
Yeah.
He eats ass. Mr. Ass Wide? That shit.
Yeah.
Mr. Cheeks Wide? Are you kidding me? So anyway, back to our fictional guys. John Blackthorne though eats ass 100%. He's got a curly beard. He's definitely an otter too, actually. Speaking of which, he's a single otter.
Okay.
So they've drifted ashore. They've basically wrecked in a small fishing village in Japan, or in the Japans, as he says it. His true mission was to disrupt the Catholic Portuguese trading posts in the area and kind of seek out and try and sink the black ships, which is what the Japanese referred to the Portuguese ships as. They were known as the arrival of the black ships is a big deal in real Japanese history.
Okay.
And they're just referred to as such throughout the entirety of the TV show.
Does Portuguese come from port, since they have so many ships? Are they just like,
I seriously doubt it.
Oh yeah, of the port. Okay.
Although I could be wrong. I know so little about Portugal other than a friend of mine in Toronto was a Portuguese guy. And he was just like, Portuguese just sounds like Spanish if spoken by a deaf person.
I've heard the same about
the language, not the word.
Yeah. The language itself. Yeah, exactly. When he would speak Portuguese, he would always do like basically like Sue Thomas FBI speaking Portuguese. Where was I here? Yes, anyway, so the true mission of the English, and in real history, the Dutch, which we'll get into, was to disrupt the Catholic traders, the Jesuits, and the Portuguese from trading in Japan, because this was like fucking unmolested trading territory as far as Europe went. Like,
even with the Catholics?
First European contact with like some, like a massive civilization, like, not to like rank. Not to make like a phrenology tier list or anything fucked up like that. Like landing in the Caribbean or in the Americas, where people's technology was fairly low in comparison. Like they had swords, metallurgy, armor, like massive temples, huge like mega structures. Like arriving in Japan this late in history and having it as a trading partner would have been incredible, because throughout the Americas, just kind of with domesticated animals and like the technology level, it's like just finding this like uncontacted empire as Europeans would understand it would have been fucking insane,
dude.
Right? And like only one place had access, because the Japanese politically were just like, absolutely not. This is crazy. Yeah. These people are weird white foreigners, and we hate them. They're definitely dangerous, and they were completely right.
Right, that's a good like default to have and to be.
Yeah, white foreigners
are dangerous.
Yeah. That should just be the title of the episode.
I have to hop in with two things that aren't completely on target. Just one thing is kind of funny. There's just a laser pulsing in my dog's eye over and over again. If is my camera okay? would, I think she's fine.
Oh yeah, there it is. Bang.
Oh yeah, I see.
They're cloudy. The crosshairs. The other thing was this kind of leaked in from the bonus. If you're interested in the bonus, check out twitch.tv/loreboyjames. The VOD is there, or also we'll put it in. It's in our Discord, discord.gg/loreboys. But there was a character we were doing of a cop who just loved young Sheldon, but was really off base on everything else. And look, over breakfast, Luis was talking about him getting into phrenology and red pill stuff, but then going back to young Sheldon. So he'd be like, yeah. So, you know, 80% of the women, they're going for 20% of the guys. I got to ask this young Sheldon guy, how do I get myself a woman nowadays? This guy knows everything.
I gotta have him take a look at this bump on my head. Tell me if I'm an idiot, huh? Yeah,
exactly. Am I predisposed to crimes? Is that why I'm shooting everybody's dog?
I mean, if we're off topic, the port in Portugal does come from port.
Oh, cool.
Portus Cale, which literally translates to the port of Gaia.
Cool. Oh, that's a good one.
Would be the,
honestly, knowing where that country is.
It was a town on the Iberian Peninsula, which then became the country of Portugal.
I accidentally took a shirt from your house that I thought said Gaia on it, but it said gear on it. Anyways, I have a green sweater from your farm if you ever need it.
Oh, that's true. You were pretty snuggled up in that.
Yeah.
It fits you like a dream. I feel like it was your sweater. Must be.
I'm just going to keep wearing it until someone tells me different. Yeah.
Goob's looking for it. He's like freezing cold.
It must be Goob, because you're the only two that... I mean, it might have been my dad's, honestly. But
who knows, yeah.
Where was it? Yes, anyway. England and the other Protestant Reformed country of Holland wanted to disrupt trade between the Portuguese Catholics and Japan, and he wanted land, form alliances, and then basically oust the Portuguese and the Catholics using the Japanese. This was kind of another like kind of twist on the colonization strategy of just like you can just rock up, forge alliances in the same way that they did like with the is it the Iroquois Confederacy or whatever, where Europeans would play like existing wars against each other to just take advantage of people here in Canada and like the northern U.S.
I'm not going to take a stab at what the name of the Confederacy was, but yeah,
something Confederacy was like the like First Nations Union, and they had their own shit going on that Europe like had attempted to manipulate. Basically, they wanted to do this again in Japan, didn't work out. As it happens, though, the man ruling the region of Kanto, which is, of course, where the first Pokemon games are set. Where Blackthorn's ship had kind of grounded itself. It ran aground in like the kind of like a fishing village, was ruled over by a man named Lord Toranaga, who also thought that a relationship with an outsider could swing a few things kind of into his direction. So John Blackthorn, or at least the John Blackthorn of Shogun, right, is not a real man. He is heavily inspired by a real man, though, named William Adams, the, as far as we know, first Englishman to ever reach Japan. And he arrived in 1600 aboard the Dutch ship, the Liefde. Sorry if I fucked that up. Captained by a man named, I only put this in because it's insane, Jacob Quakernak. Or something like that. I'm gonna put this in chat for you guys so you can give it an attempt.
The Leafda ship, when they arrived on Kanto, definitely took Bulbasaur, right?
Well, no, it'd be like Gen 2. So they're just like, we got Bulbasaur from the natives in Canada. We need to go to Japan for Totodile. Guarantee they'll give it up if we just give them a bag of shiny rocks.
But it would have been Chikorita because Leafda.
Leafda. Yeah. Oh, the Leafda, of course. Leafda. Who's this big titty anime girl you put in here?
That's from Vampire Hunter D.
That's the waifu from Vampire Hunter D.
I get it. Okay.
I didn't look up her name.
Awuga. Quakernake.
Somebody get the spray bottle for Pete. Jesus Christ. This guy can't stop talking about anime girls.
Quakernake. I like him.
Quakernake.
Who would be the first Dutchman in Japan.
That's a pretty Dutch name.
Yeah, I guess. Although I dated a Dutch girl whose last name was Swayze. That was very cool.
You dated Patrick Swayze?
Patrice.
Before he died.
Did she run to you and you picked her up and it said, I had the time of our lives, and you spun in circle? And
no, I was thinking about making like vases with him on like a throwing wheel.
Okay.
I do appreciate, Jamie, how I just let the listener assume that Patrick Swayze used she, her pronouns, and you had to correct me, and you used another male name, Patrice, for it.
Oh.
Patricia is probably the name that you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah.
You know a Patrice who's...
I know multiple Patrices.
I'm not going to dox a woman who I assume is still alive, so I will not give you her first name on air.
Patricia Swayze, we all know.
It is Patricia Swayze, of course. Mm-hmm. It is not. Mm. But if there's a Patricia Swayze out there, if you're stacked with a snatched waist, hit me up.
Gross.
Mm-hmm. What?
A snatched waist?
It sounds like a
Gen Z. You don't know what a snatch? A snatched waist is just like an hourglass figure. I thought
you said it's like if you have a vagina to throw away, like a snatched to waist. Like,
oh.
You got one to throw away all day.
Yeah, that's Pete's.
If you want
Pete's memoir,
bad sex, let me know. LoreBoysPodcast@gmail.com.
If you want bad sex with a lasting impression,
bad sex you will never forget.
Okay. If you're not using it anyways, you know.
If you've got snatched to waste. Yeah. I'll take it. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I got bumps in the head, and I got all of Young Sheldon on DVD. You gotta come by my place. Yeah.
Love that little guy.
To waste. Yeah.
Manager at the whorehouse has like a lock on the dumpster out back because the homeless keep getting in, getting all the thrown out snatch.
the garbage squirrels have chewed through the bins behind my building, man. You don't think I'm not gonna chew through the plastic cover of a dumpster? You don't know me. To get day old snatch.
Yeah, we all had that one friend who worked at a fast food place when we were like in high school.
Why don't they donate day old snatch to homeless shelters?
Yeah, exactly. The garbage bag just full of stale snatch.
Yep.
Give it to the homeless.
Yep. Old brewery mission. where were we? Right. So this
Arby's.
Is real.
We've got
again.
The meats.
Yeah. So the Liefde was the only one out of five ships who set out of Rotterdam in Holland to reach Japan after a 19-month voyage. So Liefde actually means love or charity is the way it's translated.
True.
None of her sister ships made it.
Well, we were just talking about charity, so we're on brand.
Yeah. Look, I don't set this shit up, but we are generally of a single mind when we're
recording. Yeah, absolutely.
So things turn out pretty well.
We saw where you were steering us there.
Yeah, exactly. You guys are down the golden path. We're huffing each other's zinc.
We're huffing each other's stale snack.
Exactly. So none of the charity's sister ships made it. The Hope was lost completely somewhere near Hawaii. As far as I know, the wreck has never been found. The Loyalty was captured in Indonesia.
Real hopeless mission, huh?
Yeah. Honestly, this quest of Pearl Harbor is just like, this quest of why Pearl Harbor happened is very like still like on brand, I guess, for the story. The Loyalty was captured in Indonesia. The Good Tiding was captured in Chile. And the Faith, this is so funny, fucking gave up and turned around and just went back to Holland.
Well, I guess it would be nice if we turned around.
The Faith,
if you had a snatch to waste, just don't throw the thing away, send it over to me.
So the Faith was the only one to make it home, and on board when it got back to Rotterdam, 36 out of 109 men were left. So the entire journey was pretty brutal, honestly. Like, I was thinking about this because I love the age of exploration, and just growing up there, I guess, like my formative years in the Canadian Arctic. I would love to be on one of those like Northwest Passage ships, except for my gums would bleed, all my fucking teeth would fall out.
You want to experience a time lapse of it. Like, you don't want
to be
at sea for months.
Did you ever
time.
Watch that video I posted of the Nautilus, the sub that was from World War I that had the quest to go find the North Pole?
Oh yeah, it got like stuck under the ice or something. I did end up watching. Oh, with the glass. Like it had a glass bottom or something fucking stupid.
There's like all kinds of things breaking, and they think that like the crew actually broke the rudder in the back, so they couldn't travel as fast anymore. So they would have to turn around because they just hate it. It got so bad, and everyone was so sick.
Their toilets was just like flooded, right?
Yeah, there was just piss and vomit sloshing everywhere in this tiny thing that they had to live in like 24 hours a day. It's a
under the ocean.
Yeah, the Nautilus would be a good real life lore episode. Actually, it's like, pretty crazy.
I mean, on some old ships during certain periods, at least they'd have like a little hatch near the front that you would go do your business out of, and they just had a rope which would hang in the salt water, and that's what you would pull up and use to wipe your ass. It was just the salt water rope.
Oh boy, it'll be
like
spicy.
A butt cheek floss.
I mean, however you want
salt
to make
water is not spicy unless your like asshole is cut open. Have you swam in the ocean? Did your asshole just immediately burn?
Well, I think
Jimmy seals himself up.
I think if you're wiping your ass with a rope that lives in the sea, it's going to give a little bit of a rough edge.
You're
going to
get like rope fibers poking in and stuff.
Yeah,
and like
I mean,
barnacles would definitely like love that thing, right?
To be fair to boats, that was like in ancient Rome, they had like a communal sponge that everyone used. You know what I mean?
So. I would take the sea rope.
Yeah.
I would take the sea rope too, probably. But then it's then also you're on a ship sick with all these other sailors. And like you said, your teeth are falling out and you also have to do that.
I think
it was like
can you imagine the gnarliest rope shits, dude? It's so bad.
I think it was astronauts who have to live underwater for a little while just to like test their ability to be okay out in space. And to go to the bathroom, you completely submerge yourself into the water, even at night. And the guy tells a story of, like, you go and you poop, and after a while, the fish get trained to know you're coming to poop. So when you splash into the water and you start shitting underwater, they're basically just eating it straight out of your butt as you're pooping.
Okay, well, do I have to?
Worse than the rope.
Do I have to be an astronaut to do this, or can I sign up?
Exactly. Pay for it, or? Japan's got their bidet game.
What about
point,
you go down to Mississippi or like Missouri or something? You get like one of those fish with like big, big lips, like one of those like 5 foot catfish. Can I poop in that thing's mouth?
Yeah. What if you hop
like
in the water,
like a whorehouse with catfish in it?
Yeah, a 5 foot catfish, you know, like all like bald head and everything, just like looks at you, goes fireball, and then just eats your ass like Mr. Worldwide himself.
Like Mr. Worldwide, he would do it. Yeah, the catfish really are the worldwide of the fish universe.
Anyway.
Okay, we got a boat that's shipwrecked on
our ships. Yeah, our ships had all become separated in the Strait of Magellan. You guys can open the image there. It's going to be available for patrons as well if you guys want to sign up. Which, judging by the images, looks like kind of a fucking nightmare to sail through. It's a very kind of fragmented bit of, I think, Peru and Argentina down at the end of, at the ass end of South America. It looks very difficult to navigate through, much like the Canadian Arctic, which I was just fantasizing about how cool it would be to wipe my ass with a rope in. Because that's what I'm thinking of now. It might be a little sketchy looking to us, but the Strait of Magellan was actually very good because it actually helped kind of buffer the extreme weather that is constant to this day between South America and Antarctica. The, like, whatever it is, the Antarctic Ocean, the ring of water around it, because there was so much warm water and mixing with cold water down at the bottom of the planet. The weather is consistently been insane, like, since people have been going around. So the Strait of Magellan, while not perfect, did protect ships going through it from the weather that, like, again, I mean, if this was a real history podcast, I would do, like, stuff about, like, the Endurance and all this other stuff. All these, like, insane British men who are just like, I'm going to kill 200 guys so I can just put a flag in the snow somewhere.
Yeah.
like that era of exploration.
Butcher all the dogs, yeah.
Fascinates me. I don't know why. Again, it's because my dad dragged me to fucking Cujuac when I was 6 weeks old. That's why. it's my trauma.
It is cool. Like, we don't have a lot of unexplored places except for like underwater and space now. Like, I'm sure there's deep forest. Probably Canada. There's probably places that aren't super explored, but satellites see everything from the top. So they have an idea of what's there. It's going to be forest or whatever.
Yeah. Like, but like being there and touching it is like cooler.
Yeah. Right? What's our frontier, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A Black Frontier out sometime.
I don't know. Oh, last time.
It's been out for months. So Adams arrived in the in an area of Japan then called Bungo. Now it's called
really.
Yeah,
Ethan must have named it.
That's my Pokemon rival. That's always his name is Bungo. I didn't realize it was a real thing. A real
Japanese.
It's
funny how we got the Kanto Bungo crossover, right?
Right.
Yeah. So the area now is called Uzuki. I would like to start a petition to change it back to Bungo, if
that's
you could.
Bungo.
Yeah. So despite the fact that they made it to the Japans, they were the only. It was the loyalty or love rather was the only lover charity was the only one to make it there. He had arrived with 23 sick and dying men out of the 100 healthy men he had originally left with. Oof. So the entire trip was a fucking disaster for all five ships, regardless. They were taken in, and for about a week and a half, they were being taken care of by the locals until the Catholic Jesuits said that they were the newly landed Dutchmen and William Adams were actually pirates. Afterwards, they were imprisoned in what was described as a filthy jail. In the show, they're put in like a pit with like a bamboo gate over the top, and they just dump like rotting fish waste onto the guys like that are in the pit.
Chill. That's chill.
Before they talk to one of them, basically. So, from what I understand, at this time, after the Emperor of Japan's health had gotten very bad, and then he eventually dies. There is an emperor character who dies at the beginning of the show. Five feudal lords were put in power at this time, and they were called the Daimyo. And they ruled over an area, like a province, basically, that was also referred to as a daimyo. Like, more European-pilled people like us would call this a fiefdom, because the show's subtitles, most of the show is in Japanese, the show's subtitles also translate that to a fief.
Fief.
Basically, just, like, so that we can understand what we're talking about.
True.
I think I skipped over a guy here.
Fiefdom.
Right.
Mr. Fief.
William Adams was also imprisoned with the ship's merchant named Jan Houston, another very Dutch name.
Very Dutch.
Yeah. A handsome man named Jan Swayze, who I dated and fell in love with. So Adams and Houston were taken to Lord Tokugawa Ieyasu, and again, sorry in advance if I fuck up any of these names.
Yeah,
it's like every time I do a Japanese episode, it's gonna be bad. I'm doing my best here, guys.
Post it in the in the YouTube comments because it's good engagement, you know?
Yeah.
I challenge a Japanese man to spell O'Donoghue.
Dude, I challenge an English speaking man to spell O'Donoghue. Yeah. I've been Mr. Odenug my entire life with these fucking French men out here. There's two silent letters. Which is which, baby? So Adams and Houston were taken to Lord Tokugawa Ieyasu, whereas John Blackthorne is taken alone to Lord Torunaga. Blackthorne's crew plays essentially no role in the 2024 miniseries, and after living with the Japanese for some time, he is actually like repulsed by the like hard drinking, rude and pervy sailors that he arrived with. There is a very funny scene where he like. Finally, the Japanese, like Torunaga, finally tells him where his crew have been living. And they're just, like, shit-housed, rowdy, frat boy drunk, like, screaming at Japanese women in a bar. And he, like, shows up and is, like, utterly horrified by what he's seen. Like,
It's an Englishman being presented with all these filthy Dutchmen, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. One of my favorite things, and throughout the entire show, they refer to John Blackthorne as Anjin or Anjin-sama, which is, like, Lord Anjin, I think. I'm fairly confident Anjin means like savage or barbarian, because everyone like in the Japanese subtitles is just like, what is this like loud, rude barbarian that Torunaga-sama has in his employ? Basically, they just call him a savage the entire time. There's also a bit in the show where the translator he's given is just like, "Oh, I'm sure you'd love to have a bath." He's like, a bath. I've already had two this month. You don't want me to catch like some fucking made up disease that the British probably believed in at the time. So bathing too much, in quotes.
I want to catch botulism from too much soap, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Rinse that off. You got to rinse off the saltwater shit rope. Otherwise, you get botulism from the soap on it.
Yeah. Soap on a rope, yeah.
I like your lore voice canon. Anjin means pilot, though.
Okay, so I had also seen that, and I got mixed up between what they were calling him and the subtitles constantly referring to him as a savage.
Okay, well, okay. I don't know why that would be so confusing, but
he is a savage. It's
because there was 10 hours of TV show and then 3 hours of Wikipedia is the problem. Yeah,
he was picking rope fibers out of his butthole the whole show. So.
I was busy, yeah, on Jin-sama. But yeah, everybody refers to him as a barbarian or a savage throughout the show, which is fucking hilarious.
He's there. Netflix up, Shogun on his
butt cheeks.
Yeah, on his love chair, hand mirror, pair of tweezers, just, you know, sorting himself out.
Yeah, sucker, I got a goldfish in a bag. I just hold it to my butt.
It's like, I've never used a bidet. But the goldfish sounds nice, actually.
Yeah. You got two axolotls, man. You can go crazy.
Oh, those things are too dangerous. I wouldn't trust them.
End up in your colon.
They fucked up one of my fish, like a fucking great white shark. I mean, one of my fish. They're their fish, right?
Right.
But I had 12 in there. Two of them they just let live forever. And then I just hear this huge commotion a couple days ago. And like it was like late at night. I was in bed. I could hear it from like when I was lying down. And I come back in the morning and there's like only one fish left. I was like, oh man, you guys really do hit that thing from the bottom. Because I've heard them hit the lid before. Like they'll break water and hit the plastic lid and go like bonk when like they've killed fish before. And I'm like,
they sleep though, right? Fish like at night. Because I remember going at night to the lake and we'd go and all the minnow, like herds of minnow. I don't know, flocks, schools, I guess.
It's a shoal of fish.
Yeah, so the group or shoal or school of them would all be there staying still, and you could, if you're quick enough, you could just grab a minnow out of the ground, out of the lake, and crawfish would come out at night.
If you just had a bad poop and you're in a pinch, find some sleeping minnows, dude.
Grab yourself a handful of minnows, wipe your ass with that, huh?
Now this is gross to say, but I've also just caught a minnow in my mouth before. I waded in a river with my mouth open. And they come
like a
to
crocodile.
Like, yeah, they come to pick at your teeth, and you keep your nose above the water, right, so you can still breathe, and you can stay there as long as you want. And eventually, you'll just feel a minnow picking at your teeth. Close your mouth, and you can pull it out.
Yeah.
So someone was asking if we'd survive.
Jamie invents
we'd
the alligator by accident, apparently, right?
Jamie would baby bird us little fish to keep us alive.
Guys, I got one. Get over here.
He's like a pelican, just like neck full of minnows. So in the show, John Blackthorne really appears to have a much worse time in Japan than the real William Adams overall. He's horrified by his own men, but he is very like stereotypically British levels of horrified by Japanese customs and culture. Basically, there was a good meme going around on Twitter for a while where it was just a picture of him and his translator, where they're like the first, I don't know what the character limit is anymore on like fucking Elon's Twitter. It's just like this huge paragraph of him complaining about something, and then his translator just being like, "The Anjin is upset about the condition of things," because like. In the show, her she only summarizes things when she translates them because he doesn't understand Japanese.
Yeah.
And it's like a really great dynamic between the two of them where he'll say something just toxically British. And then she'll just be like, he is upset. Is what she'll tell, like, Toranaga-sama, basically.
Reminds me of the Tucker Carlson, Vladimir Putin interview. Like, sometimes Vladimir would just, talk for, like, 30 seconds, and then the translator would just come out with just a very short sentence. Like, I really think he had more in there, but anyway.
Yeah,
Tucker Carlson interviewed Vladimir Putin. That's
dude, he went over there and he's
crazy. Yeah,
he's like, oh, Russia's great. Like, people talk shit, but everything's clean. Food prices are cheap. Yeah, we watch, Peter and I watched it out of morbid curiosity.
That's how I'm doing it. Yeah. Recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a
month
ago.
2 months ago. Holy
he went to Russia.
You said that. I was like, oh, 15 years ago, whatever.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
He went to Russia. One of the most disturbing things I've ever watched in my life.
He should be hanged, man. Jesus Christ, America, get your shit together.
Yeah, and America's been, like, spying on him and stuff, like, while he went over there, of course.
Yeah.
And apparently he, like, tried to meet Edward Snowden while he was there and, like, all this stuff. But anyways, yeah.
The only credit I will ever give Russia is that Edward Snowden is a hero. I think, like,
the
whistleblowing is absolutely a good thing. No, but, like, again, sorry, like, super off topic here. I like to give the benefit of doubt to a lot of people, right? Like, only like intellectually, at least. Like, I'll never actually like agree with these people, but it's like, let's hear them out or whatever. Vladimir Putin is both evil and insane, and this interview is fucking wild.
It's kind of a boring history of how he sees Russian history, and it's like long-winded.
And he made some of it up. He like believes shit he made up, dude. It's wild. Yeah,
Tucker goes on Joe Rogan or another podcast and talks about how he was not like super happy with the interview. He didn't get the answers he wanted. He got just like stock Russian history from the point of Russia.
And there's also like a part that I don't want to spoil at the end where Tucker has questions about a different American journalist. Which is so funny because it's basically just like, you're not going to kill me before I leave, right? It's wild, dude. It's a good watch because it's fascinating. And it's it's just like two horrible people.
Yeah, I don't know if I can stomach Tucker for 2 hours, but I'll watch
him. He creeps me out. But you love Putin. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We get it.
Yeah. I mean, him and me, you know, I kind of see his point of view a lot of the time.
Tucker, though. Ugh. Thumbs down. His laugh is weird. He's like a bug. It's creepy.
Yeah, no.
Where were we here? Anyway, on the subject of gross
weird translations.
Yeah. In both cases, the Westerners are assigned a translator. William Adams was assigned a man in real life, and John Blackthorne is assigned the Lady Mariko, a Catholic convert, played by one of the top three most gorgeous women alive, in my opinion right now, an actress named Anna Sawai. And the music video with the J-pop that I sent is her. She is one of the girls in that video. She's the one who's in the white and green, because she was a singer and a dancer before she was an actress. Like we were talking about, like, the meme format there, she is fantastic. She explains to both Blackthorne and the audience how things work in Japanese culture kind of back in the 17th century. Mariko's arc is also very tragic throughout the miniseries and is played completely straight for the time period. Like, you kind of want some modern writing to step in and just give her, like, one fucking good afternoon, not even, like, a full good day, but it is pretty miserable. And also, if you guys want to listen to one of our older episodes that I really enjoyed writing and putting together, she is one of the lead characters in the Monarch Godzilla show that we covered. She is the modern day female lead who is with old Kurt Russell instead of the
probably twice now you've introduced her by just talking about the way she looks, not her character.
I mean, hey,
I guess you did the same thing on the Monarch episode.
I don't know. The Monarch show was kind of, I don't know, maybe less good. Seeing her absolutely kill it on screen and also be debilitatingly gorgeous probably pilled me. I'm way more Anna Sawai pilled now than I used to be.
But I really like the Godzillas with that hot chick there. But really, if I want to relax. And young really Sheldon, something. I'm watching some young Sheldon. This guy knows everything.
Well, this Shogun's show. What do I tell? It's like they're talking another language. I need young Sheldon to come translate for me if I'm gonna watch something like this.
Yeah. So John Blackthorne is assigned young Sheldon with his Japanese bow tie. But we will get more into what young Sheldon did with Lord Toranaga after the break.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome back from the break, everybody. Thank you so much for sticking through the ads. So before getting into the Lord Tokugawa Ieyasu and the Lord Torunaga, who is the fictionalized version of him in the show, I would like to acknowledge the Neo games. This is the, like, Japanese, the very, very hard Souls-like. I've played through the first one. I remember talking about that and recommending it, and then, like, kind of getting bored of the second one there. The Neo games are, like, the, I think they're by Koei Tecmo. It was some of the first Souls-likes to come out, and
we've
the selling point
Neo
of that
lore,
one...
Right?
No. We have
no, done. That's what I thought, too. Someone asked for it this week, and I'm like, I'm sure Peter
Oh, really?
Did.
Yeah, no, we have not.
Or maybe last week, really recently, someone asked for it.
Yeah, no, we haven't covered it yet, because as far as I know, I'm the only one out of us who's played it.
Well, here's your Neo lore person who requested it.
This is what you're getting. Find out who that is. I will give them a shout out. So the first game's protagonist, William, the Irish in this case, in the game, not English protagonist, is also inspired by William Adams as Christendom's first weeaboo. Alternatively, Neo William is sent to Japan, like, on a mission, I think by, like, Queen Elizabeth I or something, whoever the queen was at the time in the 1600s.
Sure.
I don't really remember. And he was supposed to hunt down and kill a wizard who had kind of harnessed the power of a magical rock, take a drink, called Amrita. He then gallivants around the island kingdom, killing demons and establishing no trade relationships whatsoever. So 0 out of 10.
Wow.
Really,
when I worked
really
at a
bonering it up.
Yeah, he really boned.
When I worked at a restaurant, my boss would always ask me to pull this secret thing from under the table and give him the amaretto and not charge it. So what is this, an amaretta?
Amrita.
Amrita.
It's a different almond liquor, I think.
Okay, good.
As far as I know.
Good.
Yeah, so that's your Neo episode. I might get into it one day. I never found the game's lore particularly compelling. Boss fights, 10 out of 10. If you're into something like hard as shit, in my opinion, the Neo games are a phenomenal choice. Anyway, and if one of you two ever, like, gets into it and does an episode, I've got a bunch of, like, outdated memories from 5 years ago, the last time I played one of them.
I started it on, it was on, like, Game Pass or something. I somehow got it free, and I played a bit of it, and I was like, not for me.
I'm completely over Souls-likes.
Really? No,
Lords of, like, the Fallen's half off.
Since Elden Ring came out, and I was, like, a little tempted to get it, every time I've looked at it, I've just been like, I'm just over this style of game.
There are no, I don't know if Lords of the Fallen came out after Elden Ring, but Elden Ring kind of, like, sucked all the air out of the room. Like, nobody's really come out with, like, a, hey, this is our spin on, like, a stamina meter, guys.
I mean, that crab
game. Oh, that did come out afterwards. Excuse me.
And that crab game, like, this week?
I do love Lies of P.
You do love it.
There's, like, a crab game where you can get a gun that came out this week that's a Souls-like, too. It's like a crab's adventure.
Oh, Another Man's Garbage or something?
Maybe.
Another crab's garbage.
Another man's crabs.
Another crab. I already got Another Man's Crabs for free, dude. I don't need a remake.
There's no original ideas in Hollywood anymore.
Yeah.
Caught Another Man's Crabs.
Seven guys you can get crabs from just over and over and over again.
Thanks, Miyamoto.
If you live on a boat, everybody gets the crabs thanks to the soap rope.
Off the rope?
Yeah.
Like, off the crab rope? Ugh. So Lord Torunaga, like I said, is the fictionalized version of Tokugawa Ieyasu, or Ieyasu, excuse me, it's capital I. I wrote this, I'm a fucking idiot. Mm-hmm. He is played by Hiroyuki Sanada, a guy you will definitely recognize when you open up his picture. He has been in movies for fucking decades. He was, like, a child actor in Japan, apparently.
I do recognize him.
And he's been in, the most recent, like, American movie I saw him in, which was... like, surprisingly enjoyable. He plays Scorpion in the most recent Mortal Kombat film.
Okay.
And he was in The Last Samurai. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He was...
Sake!
That wasn't him. That was Tom Cruise.
Yeah, that's just the only part I remember from that Last Samurai.
I remember watching that. Like, I for some reason, I have a distinct memory of like sitting on my buddy's floor when I was like 10 years old watching The Last Samurai. Ooh, but his
very
dad
last
had
samurai
fallen,
of you.
His dad had fallen asleep and was snoring so loud that it was like I couldn't figure, like, couldn't pay attention to the movie. Shout out to Stewart's dad. Yeah, so, excuse me, the actor, Hiroyuki Sanada, is also the producer of the 2024 show, and if his press tour is to be believed, doing an adaptation of Shogun has been, like, a dream he has had for years now. Before he got into costume, he says he would go around the set, check out props, costumes, everything for accuracy, and it's the reason the number he gave, at least, is that 70% of the show is in Japanese, and every foreign from their perspective language is just in English, so people will just, like, have conversations in English, and just be like, wow, your Portuguese is
so
good.
Yeah, the Portuguese, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But that's because of him. He wanted a very authentic retelling. He, you know, loves his own history, obviously.
Yeah.
And had wanted to get this made for quite some time. The previous adaptation came out in the 80s, I believe. So he's when he was much, much younger. They from also like shot a, the
from a filmmaking, like, storytelling point of view too, to like make all the like make Japanese its own thing and like distinctly Japanese, and then make all the foreign languages like a shared tongue is like kind of a storytelling mechanic in itself, right? Where it's like, mm-hmm. there is this overwhelmingly Japanese presence in the room, right? Yeah. Like anytime anything's happening, and like all the foreigners are foreigners. Doesn't matter which side you're on, you're a foreigner first, and yes. and you know, kind of yeah. Juxtaposed with the Japanese.
And like John Blackthorne being a career sailor is just the
an Anjin.
The Anjin, exactly. That is just the plot reason for him being able to speak both like Dutch and Portuguese, and everybody speaking English is speaking Portuguese, actually.
Yeah, and they're probably all speaking like a lingua franca, like trader tongue from the Mediterranean, yeah, which was like common for like hundreds of thousands of years. Like there was a trader tongue around the Mediterranean specifically that sailors could speak.
Bobby, jeez. Yeah, I was going to say, Ethan, are you young Sheldon? You know so much about
it. Hello, but I do not have his mom's phone number. I leave him a lot of messages. Huh?
Hey, if I was sailing around from, let's say, Syria to Crete, and then maybe over to Italy. So, like, just a quick little shout-out I can give to everybody I pass by. You just, have them call me back. My phone's always on.
Hey, you remember that lingua franca you were telling me about? How do I say a hot dog in that language? I'm in the Japan's, young Sheldon, okay? Yeah. I need to know how to order myself a nice steamed hot dog.
Hey, Mrs. Sheldon, could you get young Sheldon to call me back and let me know what the difference between pilot and barbarian is in Japanese? thank you. I'll call back later.
And if you could also give me alternate translations in the trainer tongue, that'd be perfect.
quick little behind the scenes. Don't you let them that know that the losers will be out a little late because it's 9:30.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Okay, boss. Come on up, boss.
Please.
If you want to know what loser titles are, patreon.com/alumbuys.
Get in there. Get $3 a month gives you access to 112 episodes of bonus content. Ieyasu, along with his former lord, Oda Nobunaga, who I mentioned earlier on in the show, and
he's
another
a very
man.
Famous person.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Along with another man named Toyotomi Hideyoshi, are known as the great unifiers of Japan. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of Asian kingdoms, Japan kind of broke apart. Constantly, I guess, mm-hmm. right? Like a lot of it. I this is very white of me to say. Like every country ever, like every yeah. area ever, it kind of like fell into disarray pretty much consistently because people were, you know, eating dirt and fighting over it forever. Just like in Europe or in Africa or in North America or everywhere. Three men broadly are credited with unifying Japan, and we're going to get into some of the real history here. I don't know enough about European history, American history, South American history, African history. This guy here, Ieyasu, did a real fucking good job. He's got a real good streak that we're going to get into afterwards.
Okay, which guy, Ieyasu? Have we met that character yet?
It's Toranaga. Is the fictionalized version of Ieyasu.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. So where was I here? Right, actually with the help of the other daimyo, which was the kind of like the lords of the fiefdoms.
Yeah, the barons.
Some of the clans and some of the and some consultation with William Adams became the first shogun of Japan in 1603. So William Adams, like I said, has a really good time in Japan. He is put in a filthy prison briefly, but it's like consulted, and like they do like technology exchange with the cannons, and he is given like a manor somewhere in Japan with his own servants and everything. And Iyashu was very much just like, no, like having a foreign guy who knows other shit is great.
Yeah,
it's like, I mean, such a good idea to have someone with like a second idea.
Like we kind of said it before, the Japanese have a very vested interest in learning more about cannons and how to put them on ships, right? Like, it's one thing to get sold a few cannons, is one thing we've given a few designs, but like to really understand the inner workings, like they want to build that trade relation, right? Like,
and they're like, wow, the and also like, you're making ribs on their ships.
We got that too.
Yeah. Right? Short ribs, hell yeah.
Now, obviously, there's no photos of Iyashu himself, but if you guys want to open a picture, there is like a chubby man in like a black formal Japanese, like whatever the clothing is called here. This is the main painting of him, which I've seen in other places before. Like, this is a famous painting of a.
He's sitting crisscross applesauce, but sitting like that, he is as wide as he is tall. He's a square.
I could say wider. I was going to say, yeah, wow, he is so wide. Yeah.
Yeah. So he founded the Tokugawa.
He has a black dick on his head too.
I know. I kind of noticed that
he does. Yeah,
which is thicker than his sword.
It is a top knot, but it is very much a dick. It is very much drawn like a dick. Patreon.com/theloreboys if you want to get access to the episode picks in the Discord after this, because it might be worth it for just this one.
Yeah. Or at some point in the past 500 years, you may have already seen this photo, but I'll take the $3, dude.
Everybody has that samurai ponytail. Can I just get a big black cock on my head?
Yeah,
cock, absolutely.
Please. Just fuck me up, fam.
Yeah.
Just cock me up, fam.
Look how BBP? Thin that sword is.
Big black ponytail?
BBP, yeah. Look how thin that sword is compared to the rest of his body. That's crazy.
Sword, I think it's like a folded
up fan. He
can
pick his teeth with that. No, in his waist.
In his right hand. Right hand stays left is a fan. But yeah, I think that's a tanto. That is the thing that they kill themselves with, which in the show is so funny. Seppuku comes up so often that like every once in a while, some character will hit somebody up and just be like, damn, that was embarrassing. I suppose you'll go home and kill yourself then.
You can see, you see the end of the blade behind him there. It's long. It's just very thin.
It's his katana?
I don't know. He's a pretty wide man. Maybe he needs a long kill yourself sword.
Oh, yeah, true to get through all that.
That's true, yeah. So, Iyashu actually ended up founding the Tokugawa Shogunate, which was the government in power during the Edo period of Japan from 1603 until 1868, which is a real good fucking run. In my opinion, as far as governments go.
Okay, so I did look it up because I don't, maybe you touched on it and I just didn't hear it, but a shogun is a title of military rulers. So specific,
I did not define the term shogun.
Yeah, it officially comes from Sai'i Taishogun, which is commander in chief of the expeditionary force against the barbarians. So specifically military rulers who I guess would fight against whoever they had deemed were barbarians.
Well, God willing, keeping the Dutch out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or like back then there were actual more, it's hard to define a barbarian, but more so than today, like you could just get a bunch of ruffians who show up on your land and come to plunder you, right? Like,
yeah. I was listening to a podcast, I think it was actually Hardcore History, but Assyria,
that's right.
Assyria and Babylon. And there was this concept at the time in Assyria of the Uman Manda, who are just forget what the unknown hordes beyond is, like the most literal translation we have, which is just essentially like the Mongols and the Huns, essentially. This like broad unknowable force that kind of exists beyond, because like
just like this ocean of like horse people that just roll over the land and just like claim everything in their path, right?
Yeah, well, like, so it was before they had really like gone to battle with them, and like it was a period of time where like communication was so limited. you know, writing was just like basically new. So not many people were doing it. Not many people were sending like missives or things like that. And so there was just this like, we know there's something over there that keeps killing people that go that way, right? But we don't know what it is. And then
it was just like dehydration, and there's just like a patch of desert.
Bit of that.
Yeah, it's just like a patch of desert with a bunch of like Assyrian missives in just like the hands of skeletons in the same like sand pit.
Yeah, they see an oasis on the horizon, and they like drag themselves to it, but there's a rope dangling into it. Like, no.
It's just a rope like dragging through the sand. It's like instead of saltwater, you hit literal sand.
But yeah, man, the past was crazy. Like, if the guy on a horse that you sent you the most important thing you'd ever written in your life, you handed to a man on a horse, and if his horse broke both its front legs in a gopher hole and broke that guy's neck, no one would ever find out.
Well, I mean, he talks about the fall of Assyria and how, like, what must it have been like to come when you have never seen somebody fighting on horseback to suddenly go up against an army of people, every single fucking one of them on a horse. Like,
insane.
You just have no chance. They just like ride up and shoot you with arrows till you're dead. And if you try and chase them, they just run away and you can't catch them.
And they're right now, there is like a future military advancement that will be the equivalent of horses to us. Above nuclear bombs, above drones, we're not done.
Well, here's the thing. Like, so this is like Assyria. So this is like several thousand years BC.
This is like Boston Dynamics hordes, and storming over the hills, right?
there was horses.
You throw a box at it, just falls over.
There was horses and tanks in World War I. Like, there was cavalry charges into tank lines in the First World War. You know what I mean? So it's like relatively recent that horses really stood the test of time for a long time.
I mean, they're great. They love apples. That's good.
Apples in the dark. Dude, they know how to find them.
They can turn into apple juice in one single bite. It's just apple juice.
Next that time you get fucked up, Jamie, it. I want you to put an apple into a tank cannon to find out how quickly that turns to apple juice. They can really get the World War I experience.
check out this week's free bonus content at patreon.com/alloreboys if you want to know more.
Yeah. Right. So minor spoilers here. There is no massive battle at the end of the miniseries. It is all the politics. And it is so compelling. It is like over the course of the 10 episodes. It's all politics, but it's so fucking good. Some people might call that like all setup, no payoff. They're technically correct.
Ball's no dick, if you will.
It is, yeah, exactly. It's really just like the catfish comes up, it checks it out, it doesn't wipe your ass. It's
someone spray painted that in my neighbor's kitchen during a party. They just all brought a spray can and just all balls, no dick on the wall in the kitchen. And then for the rest of the year, we would just look at that while eating breakfast.
So Bungo is always my rival in Pokemon. Speaking of Souls-like games, that's always my Dark Souls character, is all balls, no dick.
Nice. Really? Nice. So the real life battle. So we're going to close out the episode here with the TV movie that maybe they'll make one day.
Okay, if Michael Bay did Shogun, how it would end?
Yeah, exactly. Toranaga. Oh my god. Oh my fucking William Adams would have been played by Shia LaBeouf. He would have been so annoying, and he would have just been screaming at Lady Mariko the entire.
Well, Lady Mariko would have been played by Megan Fox. So
right. Oh yeah, it doesn't have to be Transformers. There's like other.
No, but okay. So Shia LaBeouf, I'm gonna say not every Michael Bay film has Shia LaBeouf, but
he's in three, which is more than like Bruce Willis is.
Megan Fox is in a lot of his movies these days, I feel like, but
yeah, that's probably
Optimus Prime, please help! I'm in a Japanese war. I need your help right now.
So the real life battle that we're gonna talk about here, the sequel to Shogun, if they ever made it, is going to be the Battle of Sekigahara. And again, pronunciation, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Obviously, talking about Eyashu, excuse me, I forgot my own character's names here. Talking about Lord Eyashu here, this is considered to be one of the most important battles in Japanese history, since Eyashu's victory led to the 200-plus-year shogunate Oda like period of Japanese history. It involved over 150,000 men and began in October of 1600 when both armies ran into each other by accident in a dense fog and went and both retreated. Neither one of them was ready for combat at this time. The fog blew away mid-morning, thankfully, which allowed the battle to restart properly and much less in a much less embarrassing way, I suppose. Mm-hmm. The belligerents involved were Iyasu's Eastern Army, which was roughly 75,000 men. And again, we're talking about like hordes of Mongols on horseback riding over a hill here. Can you imagine 150,000 just men in armor 500 years ago? Yeah. That is also just an insane image. Because wars aren't wars aren't fought that way now, right? Like the U.S. sends in like what, like 500 Marines and Humvees to just like kill guys with sticks for money.
Warfare these days is very, very different. Absolutely, yeah. But like back in the day too, it's like because most of the fighting was melee. Like there was definitely some like arrows, but arrows would run out pretty quick, and they're hard to make.
Iyasu had also arquebuses that he'd gotten from the Dutch and the Portuguese.
Yeah, it's more just like ammo is in limited supply, even if it's musket balls, you know what I mean? Like it's in pretty limited supply. So like most of the fighting was person to person, and you probably spent most of the day, if you're in that army, standing around. There's like a chance that you like don't even see an enemy soldier if you're like like 75,000 strong, right?
Yeah. 75,000 is so many. I think I wrote it down. I will get into how many people were killed. I think it's close to 40,000 men died,
dude. The sound of like the clanking of that much armor, like it would be almost like rainfall. Like
just
how
the marching,
just how much noise there would be from the clink, clang, clink, clang on that scale. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea where I saw the stat, but I saw the stat at some point that like most, at least European medieval battles, like 10% losses either side. Like if it went more than that, that was a huge battle. So usually it's like there's first contact, that unlucky 10% on each side goes at each other, and then one side is clearly winning and the other side surrenders or retreats, you know, like because like you can tell, you're like, oh well, we're losing, so let's just go, you know?
That even happens here because this is like, it's 1600, it is still very much a medieval battle that we're talking about, right? So the belligerents involved were Iyasu's Eastern Army of 75,000 men and Ishida Mitsunari's Western Army of 120,000 men. And Ishida is not a guy I talked about yet because he becomes relevant now and he's like a tertiary character in the show. I'll get into it in a second here. But it's the main three in the TV show are Torunaga, John Blackthorn, and the Lady Mariko. The three, this is the core of the story.
But Mariko is actually Radagon, who's the same person, and they have kids all with JRRM or GRRM.
Yeah, think, right? Exactly. Yeah. So, like, the Lady Mariko and John Blackthorn are actually the same guy.
They have sex with themselves to make that word for born of two god, of one god, or whatever.
Lady Mariko is hot, okay? That's what you got to know.
And
John Blackthorn is confusing, okay?
Yeah. Sure, I like watching young Sheldon as much as the next guy, but this woman, bazinga, baby.
Her little Chinese feet, love them. It's like, they're Japanese, sir.
Yeah, he's like, young Sheldon's not here to tell me who they are, huh?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to listen to you. I'll believe it when young Sheldon tells me, okay?
Hey, yo, I'll believe when young Sheldon says it. Okay.
Absolutely.
In the show, also I wanted to clarify, Ishida's army is not called the Western Army due to a high concentration of Europeans or anything. It's just the sides of the Japanese island that they were on. That's it. So it's not like he hired the Dutch or the Portuguese to help him out and they ended up losing. The Western Army is just cardinal directions. That's all.
Okay.
Iyasu had secretly been in contact with some of the leaders of the Western Army, though, promising them land and power if they defected or betrayed Ishida. And from what I saw on Wikipedia, the six warlords from the Western Army defected, kind of evening out the number of soldiers on either side because, you know, he was at like a $45,000 man deficit as far as like army sizes go. In the show, Ishida is named Ishida, very legally distinct, and is played by a guy named Takahiro Hira. He also plays Mitsurugi in the Ace Attorney film, based off the Lawyer DS games I've never played, but I hear they're fucking fantastic.
I only just know of the guy pointing meme.
Attorney movie, and Takahiro Hira, the guy who plays Ishido, is in that film as a character named Mitsurugi. I hear those games are great. I've never played them, like, on DS. But a really funny kind of, like, coinkydink here is that Takahiro Hira is also already in a movie from earlier called Sekigahara about this battle. So he is both in his own, he's in his own prequel, like, 20 years hence, basically, which is crazy.
The Ace Attorney box art looks fun, I guess, for the movie. I will say, same score on Rotten Tomatoes as The Last Samurai. So
I like The Last Samurai, I think. That Stewart's dad snored through it, but I remember
I enjoyed it too, but it's got a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes, and so so does Ace Attorney. That's all
that's better than some of your wife's students.
Yeah, that Rotten Tomatoes.
I'm saying, guys, is that Ace Attorney is good. I'm not saying Last Samurai is bad. I'm saying it's as good as Last Samurai.
66% makes sense because Peter was watching it, Stuart was watching it, his dad was sleeping.
How many guys are keeping an eye on this movie?
Life of its art, man. What can I say?
So the Battle of Sekigahara turned when the 600 men commanded by Otani, your glasses are filthy. Holy shit.
And well, that's how Jamie lives his life.
Yeah, I need to clean them, but I'm here doing a podcast right now. I wasn't interrupting it like you speckled. Are.
Yeah, I'm sorry. The battle turned when the 600... Stop it! The 600 men commanded by Otani Yoshitsugu were forced to retreat, leaving the right flank of Ishido's army exposed, pushing him back to his remaining forces on Mount Nangu. However, the commander of these soldiers, Kikawa Hiroi, was a defector, and he betrayed Ishida when he arrived back during his retreat.
Okay.
Following this, Ishida's forces collapsed. Otani allegedly committed suicide. However, there are conflicting reports. And after his defeat, Ishida was tried to flee, but was captured by villagers, like just kind of down the mountain there, where he was then captured, brought to Kyoto, where he was decapitated. His body was buried and his head was put on display for people to see. This is very funny. There were some very minor kind of folkloric conspiracies that's just like, well, no, Eyashu respected Ishida so much that actually it was like a decoy body and a decoy head that they put on display in Kyoto. And then he was just like, look, change your name and you can live the rest of your life and die of old age as a farmer, sort of thing. So it's kind of funny how like people never change. Although this is probably like a legend reinserted like centuries later to just make the like, yeah, warfare is actually kind of brutal. And this guy we all worship is, you know, did kill a guy, killed a lot of guys, actually, just out of pride, I suppose.
A lot of people killed for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like 40,000 or something like that.
No, this guy actually, dude, he's at the Strait of Magellan. I think he hopped off in Argentina. And he's living well with the rest of the villains.
All the heroes hide in Argentina, right, Jamie?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that is the real history that the, in my opinion, fantastic FX miniseries Shogun is based off of. I have been your Anjin Savage or whatever the fuck it means. Peter O'Donoghue.
Pilot's pretty fitting, honestly, for the one Pilot hosting the show.
Yeah. And I can be found at Lorebys Podcast on Instagram. Drop us a follow. Give us some likes. Say hi. Whatever you want.
Yeah, if you want to catch the bonus this week, we put it on my stream. So Loreboy, twitch.tv/loreboyjames. That's where the VOD lives right now. I'll try and also put it on Patreon as like a free post too, to so you guys can go check that out. So patreon.com/loreboys. Both of those things. If you want more of us, patreon.com/loreboys. There's a ton of content up there. There's games, there's other posts. If you want more of me and sometimes other boys, Loreboy James on Twitch, Tuesdays and Thursdays from 8 to 10 EST is what I commit to. And every once in a while, we'll do a fun little stream on a Monday like today, where you guys get some extra bonus content. This week, there's a lot of good bonus from us hanging out together. So definitely recommend checking out the free one. And if you like that, maybe then also checking out the rest of them on Patreon. So
yeah,
we'll put those up where you can find them. Yeah.
Give it a look. Give it a look. Patreon.com/TheLoreBoys if you're interested in supporting the show. Thanks so much for everyone who has already and continues to do so. It really, really means the world to everyone who does it, including our Loreboys Prime folks who still hang out and hang around. And you guys are the best. And you deserve all the
kisses. I did not check for or shout out new patrons. End of the episode.
I think we forgot to do it last week, too.
I fucked that up.
You know what I mean?
Uh-oh. We'll get double up next week, yeah.
We're going to have the big frog come of patrons next week. Don't worry about it. And if you want to know what the fuck I'm talking about when I say big frog come of patrons, listen to the bonus episode. That's free this week, so. Because we talk about it there.
We got one patron that I feel like is big enough to mention twice, like at the end now and the start. We got a new $99 patron. The top tier. I'm scrolling up to remember their name. Deathfall98. We can call them out again next week.
Two top dogs.
Join.
So thanks so much. All the kisses for you. If you guys want to support the show and you don't have the disposable income, the best way you can help us do so is by sharing the show with your friends, your family, loved ones, coworkers, strangers at the supermarket, everybody you can. Word of mouth is the only way. The show grows, and it's been growing like crazy and continues to do so, all thanks to the hard work from you people. So don't stop. Keep it up. And leave us a review on your podcast app of choice, 5 stars, if you can think of it. And if you're on the app right now, go ahead and do it. If you're driving your forklift, just keep driving and pull up your phone and friggin' leave us a review.
Leave your dominant hand on the controls, at least.
Yeah, exactly. So we got big announcement, of course. If you don't trust Patreon, we do have Loreboys Prime. Big news in the Loreboys Prime world. This the big unveiling and opening. It's been a while since we've had an opening, okay? We are opening an aquarium, okay? We need fish. Need you guys to send us some fish.
get them. No reason, though. We've got all the food taken care of. Yeah,
we're not gonna poop in it.
I'm particularly interested in eels. If you have eels, please send them our way. No electric eels, okay? Not making that mistake again. So put them in a little plastic baggie and send them our way, care of UPS, you know, and... we'll take care of the rest.
Absolutely. Don't ask any more questions. We just need all those fish. The ones with the big kissy mouths, no teeth.
No questions, just fish.
Just a good gummer. Just a good river gummer, dude.
Yeah. Gummer, dude. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Well, we got to go noodling.
Yeah, we're going to noodle. Your boys are going to noodle, but you guys have a blessed weekend. I think that would constitute a Loreboys.
Loreboys. Out of the Japans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.